seated. We'll go ahead and go with the, our next case, which is case, case number 56640. Excuse me, I cited the wrong one. Here's my calendar. I apologize to the doctor. 60013, the County of Clark versus V.R. Horton. Okay, and counsel, ready to proceed?
Ready.
Let me do so.
My name is Paul Johnson, Deputy District Attorney, representing the county and the county assessor. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal if I can. This case is a tax abatement case that was filed initially in Clark County with the county assessor. The taxpayers got their tax bills on July the 15th, 2006. And in the meantime, those tax bills were for the 2006-2007 year. Mm-hmm. The 2007 legislature amended the appeals statute for abatement issues. Prior to the 2007 legislature, there had been no time limit on appeals. It just said you can appeal. And in the 2007 legislature put in a time limit that said that you had to appeal by January 15th of the tax year that the abatement was for. So that became effective July 1, 2007. On January 11th for one of the other parties and January 15th for the other, they finally filed an abatement appeal with the county assessor under that statute. The assessor rejected it and said it was untimely because it hadn't been filed under this newly revised statute within the time frame that was allowed. That was appealed to the Nevada Tax Commission, who upheld that untimeliness issue. And then they issued their final decision on November the 24th of 2009. Then the taxpayers on December the 17th of 2009 filed a petition with the Tax Commission for reconsideration. On January 4th, the director of the Tax Commission issued a letter which purported to stay the November order pending the Tax Commission ultimately hearing it at some unstated date in the future. There was a hearing in April and finally an order denying the reconsideration in July of 2010. The appellants filed their appeal of that denial order in August of 2010. We went to the district court, and skipping over some of the interceding stuff, the district court granted their petition. We'll be appealing both the jurisdictional issues as to the timeliness of all of their procedures that they did and on the merits of this district court's order that they thought were timely as to their initial filing. The county's position are that you can't get judicial review of a denial of a reconsideration. You can only get judicial review of a final order in a contested case. That took place in November of 2009, and they didn't file their petition until August. The petition very clearly stated it was a petition of the denial, and it had a copy of the denial attached. It didn't have a copy of the underlying order attached, the final order. So what we have is one untimely filing after another here. They had 30 days to file their petition for judicial review, not the 9 months that they took. They had 15 days to seek reconsideration with the Nevada Tax Commission, not the 23 days that they took. And they had the Tax Commission also is at error here because they're under the statute, under NRS 230.030 sub 4, the statute says that the agency must either grant or deny a petition for reconsideration before at least 5 days before the 30-day appeal window closes for a petition for judicial review. Well, they didn't do that. Instead, they waited 6 months to grant a written order, which was a denial. And under that same statute in the Administrative Procedure Act, you can only get review if the petition is granted and a subsequent new final order is issued. Then you get review of that new final order, not of the reconsideration. And But the argument from the other side is, well, the tax commission has a regulation that says that they can do this, so therefore it must be okay. But I don't think that the regulation can trump the statute, which is very clear and unequivocal that it must be done within that particular time frame. Mm-hmm. And the regulation itself actually it only goes astray in one place. For the most part, it follows the statute and says, if we do grant it, then you will get review of that new final order. It doesn't say anything about you get review of our denial or granting of the petition to reconsider, but of the new final order, which is what the statute requires. It only goes astray in saying that, well, we can take our jolly good time and grant or deny it any time we want. It doesn't really matter what the statute says. So that part of it, I think, is invalid. I think that pretty much addresses those issues as to the timeliness of the filings. The underlying issue is the timeliness of the initial petition to the county assessor under that newly amended statute. And under that statute, the legislature allowed 6 months from the tax bills go out on July 15th each year. Approximately, the tax rule has to be filed on July 10th. And then the tax bills can't go out until the tax rule is filed. In this case, both of the tax bills did go out on July 15th, which they typically do in Clark County. So 6 months from that date would have been January 15th, which was the new cutoff that was imposed by the legislature. Now, of course, you can't cut off claims such as this one that are already in existence. If you strictly construed the statute and said, well, you had to file by January 15th of 2007 under this statute, before the statute even became effective, they would have been cut off. We can't do that. And there's case law in Nevada, which I've cited to you in your brief, where the Supreme Court said, in a situation like that, what you do is grant a reasonable time after the effective date of the statute. And there's extensive federal law, case law, saying that what that time is, it's either, if you have a pre-existing statute, it's either that pre-existing time or from the effective date, the new time that's granted. In this case, there was no pre-existing statute, so the only real option you have is the new limit that was imposed by that 2007 statute, which was 6 months. And in this case, that would have cut them off on, since it was effective July 1, would have cut them off on January 1 of 2008, and both of them filed after that. So therefore, they were denied.
Mr. Johnson, in regards to Judge Russell's order, I know you disagree with that for very obvious reasons you just said, but can you specifically point to the errors, both in his findings and his decision, you know, like that, that you feel we should reverse?
Well, I think that, for one thing, I'm not quite sure what the judge ordered, because he has several sections in it, and one of them talks about, well, there really isn't any statute of limitations at all for pre-existing claims, and another one says, well, there really ought to be a statute of limitations, but it ought to be January 15th of 2008 for these claims. And I think that was, both of those were error. I don't think that you could say reasonably that the legislature intended to cut off all claims after July 1, 2007, and allow claims before July 1, 2007 to be filed at any time forever. And the second one, I think, was an error because he granted a longer period for these taxpayers than anyone else was going to get. Anyone else, when they get their tax bill July 15th of 2007 or July 15th of whatever year after that, would have until January 15th to file. These taxpayers would get more than that window. They would get a bigger window. And I don't think that the case law supports that. It says, at the most, you give them the same window that everybody else got. So I think those were both errors. and the conclusion should have been that the tax commission was correct, that allowing a six-month window which closed on January 1, 2008 was what the law should have been read to say. What I was arguing was wrong with that decision.
Isn't that kind of difficult with the taxpayers? We're kind of in an Alice in Wonderland type world. As far as these times, everybody's kind of guessing what it is and when it starts from and all. Should the taxpayers be penalized for lessons because of the uncertainty?
Well, you've got to remember that they'd already had their tax bill for a year and just sat on it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's my other argument, which I also made to the MTC, that if the statute of limitations didn't bar them, then latches should, because All of his taxes were collected without protest. They were all spent, and the county had no idea that they were going to come in later and claim that they should get a refund when they came in the middle of the subsequent tax year and then file a claim. And there's case law that says that if you prejudice the other party by your delay, then you should be not have a right to pursue that claim. And I think that, although the tax commission never went there because they ruled on the basis of the statute, so they didn't have to consider that. That was in front of them, and I think that that's an alternate argument. If you think, well, you know, they really didn't have enough time under this new statute, they had plenty of time. They had their bills for almost a year before the statute even passed and did nothing. They just paid them and sat there. So I think the county was prejudiced by that and all the others whose taxes would now have to be refunded. I would like to point just quickly to our Washoe Viotto, which says that you have to strictly construe the APA and you have to follow those procedures strictly. And only final decisions are reviewable, not all decisions. And nothing in this statute or the section that that court was reviewing, which was a different section, but the principles are the same, suggests that its requirements are anything but mandatory and jurisdictional. And I think that their untimeliness at all these different levels, it just mandates that they should be not be able to pursue this in court, and the tax commission's decision should be upheld. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You have about a little over 4 minutes then. Mr. Bernhard, you may. Mr. Bernhard is taking a rest from the Gaming Commission. I assume who it is. Mr. Rubin, I would ask you maybe to start on Washoe Auto versus Washoe County's recent case. What's your thoughts on the implications of that case to the facts of this one?
Well, Your Honor, we agree with that. Absolutely, that the Nevada Administrative Procedure Act should be strictly applied. In this case, what that means is that the Judge Russell's order granting judicial review should be upheld in this case, because one of the things that the Nevada Administrative Procedures Act provide is that when there is a petition for rehearing or reconsideration before an administrative agency, the administrative agency must issue a decision granting or denying that reconsideration or rehearing no later than 5 days before the petition for judicial review is due. Now, the reason for that is obvious. It's not an either-or as far as the petition for judicial review or petition for reconsideration. It is both. The Nevada law allows the aggrieved party to pursue reconsideration and says to the agencies, you have to give them some kind of notice. If you're going to deny reconsideration, for example, like was done in this case, you have to do that in a sufficient time so that the aggrieved party has time to go to the judicial review route. It's not meant to be a trick. It's not meant to put an aggrieved party in a position to say, well, either I have to file a petition for judicial review and thereby lose my right, and that is a regulation of the tax commission that's at issue here, by the way. If a petition for judicial review is filed, as a matter of law, necessarily a petition for reconsideration is denied. So it really puts the aggrieved party gives the aggrieved party a Hobson's choice. In this situation, the exact situation where we were in, is we had filed a petition for reconsideration. It hadn't been ruled on, and so we had to make a choice. Or if you adopt the county's position, we're in the position where we've got to make a choice and either file petition for judicial review and lose that right to reconsideration, or take our chances, take a gamble that the agency will reverse itself and grant reconsideration, in which case we move forward from there. But if we lose that reconsideration, we've forfeited that right to judicial
review. So there's no tolling while the reconsideration is pending.
No, and that is the whole, there's no automatic tolling, Justice Gibbons. Mm-hmm. That is the whole purpose of the regulation that's at issue here, NAC 360.185, subsection 4. The whole purpose of it is when you're in a situation where you've got an agency not an individual who is making the final decision on for purposes of the Administrative Procedures Act. When you have an agency, and for whatever reason, that agency isn't able to comply with that requirement that they do it within 5 days of the judicial review deadline. When that happens, like in this case, the director of the Department of Taxation has the authority to stay that decision. Now, the only purpose, the only reason, the only meaning of that regulation is a situation like this, where we file for reconsideration, the tax commission can't comply with the law. And Otto, as you pointed out, says you've got to strictly comply with it. The tax commission's in a position where they can't. So this regulation gives them that out and says, okay, in that situation, we're just going to put things on hold, we're going to stay the decision until we make a ruling on the reconsideration issue. In which case, in this case, they did that. And they made a ruling on the reconsideration issue on July 16, 2010. We filed petitions for judicial review in these cases within 30 days after that. By ruling on the motions for reconsideration, what the agency did was it effectively lifted the stay that was imposed by the director in pursuant to that regulation.
Counsel, I understand we've asked you to argue it in this fashion, but going back to the initial situation, we're talking about the 2006 tax year. Mm-hmm. We're talking about a claim that was initially brought in 2008, which is 6 months plus after the original determination. The payment of taxes, there was no protest at the time. Why is not the initial decision of the county correct before we even get to the reconsideration efforts? Why is A, timely, in terms of the new statute and having the six-month window and nothing being done, as well as the taxes not being paid under protest to give the county even notice that there was a serious dispute?
Thank you, Justice Douglas. The reason is that we disagree with the characterization that the county has made about the manner in which this came about. First of all, we got the tax bill. Our clients got the tax bills on or about July 15th of 2006. As soon as it noticed, and it noticed relatively quickly that there was an issue that we wanted to raise with the county, that issue was raised with the county. Now, the taxes were not, it's true, paid, quote-unquote, under protest. But there's not a genuine dispute that the county was aware that we objected to the manner in which
the form of filing, if I'm correct, was not until 2008.
That's right, Your Honor. But there were conversations. There was a reference in the record to conversations that were happening. And the reason why, what I would ask the court to do is, that's really a latches argument that the county has made. And latches really was the applicable deadline before the amended statute. Now, that's an equitable doctrine that requires consideration of facts. Well, the tax commission didn't make a decision on latches because they didn't have anything resembling a complete factual record on what kind of conversations were happening, when were they happening, how much notice did the county have that there was an issue that the taxpayer intended to raise. So if it is the direction of the court that that is an issue that needs to be considered, at a minimum, it needs to go back to the tax commission for the development of a factual record as to that issue. What were those conversations? What was happening? Well, let me address the more direct point of the county, that somehow, although everybody agrees that the amendment of this statute took place after this tax year. And if it applied to this tax year, the taxpayers would have had to file their appeal with the county January 15, 2007, before the 2007 legislature even
The amendment took place July 1, mm-hmm. 2007, if I understand it right.
That's right. It took effect that date, correct. And what happened when that amendment took effect is, it said the first deadline, the first statutory deadline that was ever imposed on this issue is January 15, 2008. That's the first deadline. And we get into some confusing areas because the county keeps characterizing this as a six-month deadline. It's not. It's not a six-month deadline. It is a date certain deadline. Mm-hmm. So to go back and say, well, it's 6 months because usually people get their tax bill around July 15th. The deadline is January 15th, so that's 6 months. Well, that's not entirely accurate because it's not a six-month deadline. It's a January 15th deadline. And that is the deadline that our clients were looking at and saying, okay, this is the first time, the only time, that a deadline has ever been imposed. We're going to abide by that deadline.
Counsel, were they going to sit on their rights indefinitely? And I guess that's a question that maybe goes back one level in your argument. And that is, I realize that before the amendment there was absolutely no time imposed. But you acknowledge that your clients knew there was a problem, even if you take the amendment all the way out of it. So you acknowledge that there was a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But you also acknowledge that while you were having conversations with the county, taxes were paid. They were not paid under protest. I guess that's my first level of concern, is that I don't know that whether there was an amendment or not. First step in my mind is, when were they going to do something? I mean, is it endless?
Certainly not, Ms. DeSeda. Certainly not endless. Were they going to sit on their hands forever and not do anything about that? The answer to that is certainly not. They were going to comply with whatever deadline existed. Now, while they're in the process of negotiating or speaking with the county, there is no deadline. So there's no urgent act that they're required to undertake. As soon as there is a deadline imposed, they do their best to try to figure out how does that deadline apply to us, and what are we supposed to comply with here. Now, had the county at any point made a telephone call, sent an email, posted on their website that new statute here, here's how we're going to interpret it. We're going to interpret it to mean 6 months after the effective date, that's the deadline for any pre-existing claim. We would have complied with that. It's just a matter of days that we would have applied to it.
But prior to that deadline being in place, and I'll let you continue because I know I'm probably beating a dead horse. Prior to that amendment, there still was, a threshold that would have allowed your client to essentially put their concern on the record by paying under protest. And I'm still concerned why they didn't do that.
They didn't do that because it was not a requirement of the law. We were doing our best to try to comply with the law. And certainly, had it been any indication that you guys need to pay this quote-unquote under protest as opposed to, you know, making the protest otherwise known to the county, we would absolutely have complied with that. But, Justice Sada, I think you're getting to the heart of this case. This case is not about a deadline. And it's not about 6 months. It's not about any of that. It's about notice.
Exactly.
And what are we supposed to comply with? How can we possibly predict that 6 months, or for that matter 9 months, or 3 months, or whatever, is going to be the deadline that is selected when the first time there ever was a deadline was January 15, 2008?
And we have another problem, too, within this wonderful maze of administrative procedure rules and acts. The 233B issue as to 30 days after service of the agency's final decision.
Mm-hmm.
We have a final decision, the reconsideration based upon the APA in section 233 does not create a new final decision because the reconsideration was denied. The strangeness in this. So what are we to do?
I understand the quandary, and I think Justice Gibbons summarized it accurately. It really is an Alice in Wonderland, hazy kind of world that we're in.
So you have to tell us how we can get out of it.
What we suggest is that the regulation that is at issue, that allows the director to impose the stay, is the key component. And in order to give that meaning, what we say is that the final decision is the final decision. November 24, 2009 is the final decision. But what the director does is he says that decision is stayed. As of January 4, 2010, it's stayed. Not its execution is stayed, not anything. The decision itself is stayed, and that's what the letter says. Now, they come back July 16th of 2010, and they say, motion for reconsideration denied. And if you interpret the regulation that allows the stay to be imposed, the director's imposition of the stay, saying this decision is stayed until the commission acts on the reconsideration, and then the July 16th decision saying reconsideration denied, what you get is that decision issued back in 2009 becomes effective. The stay is lifted as of July 16th, 2010. It's as if the Tax Commission took its decision, put it in a drawer, and just didn't issue it until July 16th, 2010, is the effect of how it worked out. And there's no question that if July 16th, 2010 is the effective date of the final decision, our petitions for judicial review is timely.
On the lashes issue, the alternate argument made by the county here, what's your position on that?
Our position is that there is an inadequate factual record to make that finding. It was presented to the Tax Commission. If they felt that they had an adequate factual record to decide that, yes, we did sit on our hands and it's only equitable to decline us on that basis, they would have done that. There is almost next to no factual record on that issue.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Mr. Johnson?
I think I'll begin with the latches argument. The county raised that argument at the Nevada Tax Commission, and the argument is basically they waited too long because we're outside of the tax year. The money's been spent. And current counsel was not counsel at the time, but there was no counter-argument, there was no counter-fact, no nothing opposing that argument. We argued about the statute, and that was it.
Did they make any findings on the matches?
They didn't make any findings, but there really wasn't anything to find. I mean, on the face of it, they'd waited a year and a half, and the money had all been collected and spent without any protest. That was our factual argument. That's all we intended to prove up. They never came in with their previous counsel and put on anything that said that they'd ever contacted the county or given us any notice. Their previous counsel, I've cited this in my brief, the only thing he cited was, well, the county agreed that this really should have been a remainder under the statute. But then he attached a copy of an email from 2009. That was when they first started to discuss it with the county, long after they'd actually filed this thing. So to argue that there's not an adequate factual record, that's not the county's fault. It's their fault. We raised the issue, and they didn't put anything on to defend their side of it. What they did was, finally at the petition for reconsideration, one of their attorneys said, well, I believe that there's a lot of stuff in this record that shows that we've raised this with the county a long time ago. But there was nothing in the record. Nothing. And he wasn't even counsel at the time that he could even say that. He had no knowledge, no personal knowledge of anything that happened before he came on board. So that argument, I think, is you'd have to say that, you know, it's their fault if there's nothing in the record. It's their fault. It's not anybody else's fault. The Tax Commission didn't address it, but they didn't have to. They just said, hey, you lose on the statute. We're never going to look at this other stuff.
It is troubling, Mr. Johnson, since you brought up in that term of their fault, when the rules aren't prescribed for the parties to follow. And they sought guidance from the Tax Commission as to how to go about this. The first issue as to when must they act, we have some case authority, but no one is citing to a regulation saying they must follow by this date certain, or within 6 months or anything else. There's no directives from either.
Well, I think that gets to the statutory side. I'm talking just about latches.
I understand, but looking at it, Well, I think that touching in this almost fairness that it's their fault, then I have to query back and say, from the state or the county, what did they do to show you must do this by this date? Then we'll go further down the road, and we get this Alice in Wonderland concept of being told by the agency, it's okay to do this, and then to find out afterwards, no, it's not okay.
Well, I think there's a couple of problems with that, too. Number one, they didn't timely file a petition for reconsideration. They waited 23 days when the statute says 15 days. So to argue that it's the tax commission's fault that they didn't issue an order granting or denying within 25 days, that gave them 2 days to comply with the statute. And if you look at their regulation, in subsection 3 of NAC 36185, it says, except as otherwise provided in subsection 4, if the commission has not taken action on a motion or petition for reconsideration within the 15-day period allowed by making, et cetera, the motion shall be deemed denied. So if the regulation says, if we haven't done anything, you're denied. And you better get over to court and file. And the only exception is with subsection 4, it says, if they're not going to meet within that time frame, which they typically only meet quarterly, they're never going to meet within the 15-day time frame. The director may, upon showing good cause, stay enforcement of the commission's decision. It doesn't say he stays the commission's decision. It doesn't say he withdraws it. It doesn't say he tolls it. He stays enforcement. And the stay of enforcement under subsection 5 may be ordered upon the condition that the petitioner comply with the specific terms. They're still in effect. But the order's still in effect. They're just staying in enforcement. So if they were going to go out and collect something, they would delay that. But the decision itself is not withdrawn. Could I have just another minute?
Sure.
Okay. I'd like to point out that also that the director didn't even issue his letter purporting to stay enforcement until the 30 days had gone. It was final. It was not appealable before anything ever came out they could rely on. Are they allowed to just sit there and wait and say, okay, all right, 30 days expires tomorrow. We haven't heard from the tax commission, so let's just wait and see what they do. I don't think they can do that. The statute's pretty plain. You've got 30 days, if the tax commission hasn't acted under subsection 4 to grant or deny within their 25-day window, you better get to court and file something. You can't sit there and wait for them. And I don't think the tax commission can do anything after the 30 days have run. That's it. They're done. I've cited a case out of Pennsylvania, Sir Wickley, that says once the 30 days is gone, the administrative agency is through. They can't touch this anymore. And I just really bothers me that it's everything at every stage pretty much is untimely, and they come and try to argue that it's somebody else's fault when it's really their fault.
Thank you very much, Mr. Johnson, Mr. Robert, Mr. Bernhardt. Thank you for your excellent briefs and arguments. The case will stand submitted, and the court will be in recess until the call of the court.